All right, we are at Splash with a familiar face. We talked to Creston Thorup at JAL 2008, I believe the last time we had you on camera. Thanks for coming on.
Well,
right on.
Thanks.
So you, Trifork is your company.
Yes.
And you guys put on what used to be called JAL, which is now called GoTo. We'll get into maybe why you changed the name. How's everything going? What are you up to these days?
I'm up to a lot of different things. I mean, I'm like jack of all trades in Trifork doing, you know, we have like, this is 7 or 8 different conferences, large conferences that we run, the QCons and GoTos, and we're engaged with Yahoo in Australia.
Okay.
So I do part of the editorial work for that.
Okay.
That's part of my day job.
Excellent.
And then I... And then I'm like technology pusher,
okay.
inside the company.
All right.
Like constantly making sure that Trifork is a cool place to work. You know, most of what we do is integration projects. We do a lot of government healthcare stuff. We're 160 people.
Excellent.
Lots of different projects going on.
Good.
So I'm like constantly, you know, spotting new issues and technologies that I can use both internally in the company as part of conference material and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of generally my job.
Yes.
To do those two things.
Yeah. And of course, you also write code.
And I write a lot of code.
Yes, you do.
I'm a hacker. I like to, you know, when I do presentations, I like to say, you know, not these fancy titles, CTO or whatever. I'm like, Creston, I'm a hacker.
Good. Yeah. Excellent. Speaking of hacker, we can go about a little back into your distant past. You were actually done work with Objective-C. Can you talk to us a little bit about what your history in that language?
Yeah, I was kind of I was very fascinated with language design, language implementation when I was undergraduate.
Okay.
So I grabbed onto these bits and pieces of GCC. There were bits and pieces of Objective-C in there because Next had already been doing some work with moving Objective-C from a preprocessor to being embedded in GCC. So I picked some of those open source pieces up and made a complete implementation of that.
Nice.
So one day I was finding myself getting an email with an interview, job interview.
Nice.
Like very early on. I was super excited.
Good.
So I was working at Next for 3.5 years or so.
Nice.
It was in that period in between Next stopped making the black hardware.
Okay.
And up until right before it was acquired by Apple.
Yes.
So that was the software period. It was actually changed names from Next Computer to Next Software in that period. And so I worked on ports of Objective-C, on the runtime system, optimizing that. In that period, we ported it to Windows, to Intel, the Intel Next Step, or Mac OS.
Okay.
HP, the Solaris, Spark port.
Okay.
So I worked on all these, kind of adding little things to the language and optimizing the runtime and, you know, debugger integration and stuff like that level.
Awesome.
It was really an awesome place to work, definitely.
I bet. I mean, and are you surprised at how well Objective-C is doing these days? I mean,
yeah, since iPhone opened up for application development in Objective-C, you know, it's really surprised me, very much so. And it's really amazing that old language managed to become so popular now, because I mean now it's really the hot talk of what's happening in Objective-C. And when you look at it as a language design, it's really ugly from many different points of views. Like they're just barely getting garbage collection in there. You still do this weird reference counting, and there's all the issues of integrity and memory models that, you know, Java and C# have been struggling with in many different ways. So, I mean, my evaluation is it's really not the language that matters. You know, it's all the other things. You know, it's because they have frameworks and libraries that are stable and relatively good, and they've been kind of evolving and stabilizing them over a period of, 20 years?
Yeah.
Or 25 years?
Okay.
And it's all the user experience and all the packaging and all the project management around it, more so than the language, really. As a language guy, you know, I tend to think it must be, you know, for to have a really cool platform, you need a cool language, of course. But maybe that's not so. Maybe you just need...
good libraries.
You know, good libraries, so that when you approach building something new, you know what to do. You know, and there's good documentation and examples for how to do things. I mean, that's often an issue.
Yes.
I was part of also, like, an early adopter of the whole introduction of Java. We were early at Trifork. Trifork was really started as a Java consulting company, the first one. You know, we were like the Java go-to guys for the first many years in our, like, region.
Yes.
And early on, you know, it was pitiful, you know, because there were no libraries and it was slow and we had to build everything ourselves and stuff like that.
So and what? Now, and now?
Yeah. Well, now it's kind of totally mainstream. It's already legacy. It's you know, from a geek guy like me, it's getting seriously boring, right? Because it's all there. There's nothing new to invent, right? There's just, you can crank out new apps. All the infrastructure is there. So what's left to innovate? Plus, you know, just the whole sheer mass of users also make it very difficult to evolve the platform. So, I mean, that happens for any platform.
Yes.
You know, when it gets, if you get critical mass, it becomes very difficult to do any new interesting stuff.
Yes. This is true.
So it kind of gets stopped by its own success to some degree.
Now, with Java 8,
mm-hmm.
it seems that the language is now on a maybe more of a innovative train. It seems like it had paused for a while there.
Yeah.
The language itself, I mean, the JVM supports a lot of languages.
Yeah, that's definitely part of the new... That where the new stuff is happening is in all the other different languages that are supported on the JVM platform. And looking at the JVM as a platform, as an alternative to an Intel platform or a Windows platform, there's Java as a platform because you can run many different kinds of things on it. So yeah, that's where the innovation is happening right now. And that's also when we look forward at Java 8. I mean, maybe there's some new low-level features added there. Maybe there's some more performance, but probably nothing significant at the language level. I wouldn't expect that.
Okay.
No.
So why did you name Jao Goto?
Well, we were kind of... When we were talking to people about the conference, new people, trying to sell tickets, basically, introducing it to sponsors, to potential new attendees, to all kinds of parties that didn't know about it beforehand, immediately when they heard Jao, they would think, ooh, this is a Java and OO conference. And, you know, it has evolved to be so much more than that. It's a very broad conference on anything from architecture to methods to agile to... functional programming to .NET, Java, you know, whatever platforms. So it's much more of the broad kind of modern software development platform.
But I mean the GoTo is such a, I mean it's interesting because GoTo is one of those structures or concepts that sort of has those who love it and those who hate it. And it's kind of low level, right? I mean, it's like it's useful for compilers. It's useful for, you know, command control structures.
Yeah.
Talk to me about...
Yeah, I don't think...
It's the go-to conference, I get it.
Yeah, it's the place you want to go to. It's what do you want to go to today? And in terms of language constructs, it's obviously... to me, at least, it's obviously so backwards and old that it's more like retro.
Got it.
Calling it GoTo than it's any attempt to kind of favor GoTo as a language construct.
Of course, of course.
So it's more joke.
Good.
And it's kind of relevant and it's kind of generic.
Yeah.
So,
right on. Cool. But we got that out of the way.
Yeah.
Because I have to say, jowl was always kind of weird to say.
Yeah.
It doesn't kind of roll off the tongue.
That too.
And go-to is cool. I mean, it's a cool name. Go-to, the go-to conference. It's the go-to place to be.
Yeah.
And I hope we can, we'll get there next time. Channel 9 and some other cool things. In terms of this conference, like, what are some of the big problems that you're kind of tracking these days in the programming languages world and the general purpose computing world?
Well, what I'm very concerned with is that now as I mentioned before, we've been doing a lot of healthcare infrastructure.
Yes.
And one of the things is that our software is turning more and more into infrastructure. So we're increasingly becoming dependent on our systems running 24/7 and being able to do upgrades as they run, have high availability. All these kinds of issues are increasingly kind of creeping in to the systems that we build. There's all this talk about cloud, how do you build software for cloud, which is also along the same vein of how do you build a system that is part of all this infrastructure. So software as infrastructure, not infrastructure as a service, but this whole thing that we're increasingly dependent on, it, and particularly for our, like, the healthcare systems that we're doing, you know, it's like you almost can't prescribe a drug in Denmark if our systems don't run. Of course, there's manual procedures,
yes,
but, you know, it gets cumbersome, right? So it's turning into infrastructure for healthcare. And so looking at that, and then also learning about Erlang some years ago, I suddenly realized there was something to learn here, right? And so actually I spent a lot of time the last 2 years diving into Erlang, and that's what I'm giving a talk on tomorrow.
Excellent.
Is kind of that learning experience and what comes. I mean, this whole thing, what I learned from that, coming at Erlang from an object perspective, and really internalizing this whole notion of stability. I mean, in terms of Erlang, it came from as a system, a DSL for building control systems for network switches and telco switches and stuff like that. And there it's pretty obvious you want high availability.
Sure.
But the principles and the 20 years of experience in this area are super applicable to lots of systems now where we're seeing software being infrastructure in lots of other areas.
Okay.
So what I've been trying to do is go into this world with like an open mind and to kind of harvest patterns. So what is it that they do that enable them to do software upgrades? You know, Ericsson telco switches, you can software upgrade them while they're switching calls, right? So you upgrade the software as it is running.
Nice.
And you can manage different versions of the software running on different nodes in a cluster, and you know, all these issues that pertain to soft upgrades or rolling upgrades that, you know, there's super hot topics in cloud and DevOps and all this stuff. They did this 15, 20 years ago.
Nice.
You know, it wasn't as advanced back then, but they have the experience. So what I actually did, now I'm a language hacker, so I built a complete Erlang implementation.
Nice.
That runs on JVM.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I actually spent a good part of 6 to 8 months full time, pretty much, doing that.
Great.
And so I learned a great deal in that.
So what do you call it, Jurlang?
Oh, it's called Erjang. Yeah.
Okay, Erjang.
So it's pretty complete. You can run Erlang distribution and run many of the existing Erlang systems on it and all that stuff. But most importantly, you know, I learned about Erlang in the process, and I gained access to the mindshare of the Erlang insiders, people who had experience with this for many years. So actually, Yeah. So many people think when you know there's so much. One of the things that annoys me here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Is that there's like almost a fetish. There's like an I don't know. There's a greed. There's a complete drive to this multi-core parallelism stuff.
Yes.
And there's so much interest in that, mm-hmm. right? So people are so busy talking about how can we make our programs run faster. There's all this multi-core. It's an issue. How do we tackle that? And they look at it very much from an engineering perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that's of course fine.
Yes.
But the problem is nobody is really looking at how do we make these super parallel concurrent systems comprehensible.
Yeah.
How do we make them understandable so that we can think about them? Mm. Lots of people are working on means to kind of automatically parallelize systems. But when you talk distributed, when you actually physically have distribution. You physically have multiple cores. Often, what you want is like concurrency by design, and you want to explicitly manage and control and understand what the concurrency is. Because the problem when the problem you're trying to describe is inherently concurrent or inherently parallel,
mm-hmm.
then I think it's often advantageous to look at it kind of top down, because often many of the issues that we have are of this nature, where they are by nature concurrent. Like mm-hmm. any interactive system, any system that receives events from more than one source, where you need to coordinate what to do when these events happen in different orders.
Yes.
So basically any GUI application, right, that you have to coordinate user input events from network events, from disk events, running computation in the background as you're also doing GUI presentation. For these kinds of things, you need to kind of be conscious about the concurrency and yes. model that. And that kind of experience is actually inherent in the Erlang experience, because there's an interesting overlap between Erlang style concurrency and parallelism, because an Erlang system, as it happens, just runs quite naturally on a multi-core, because you describe your system in terms of these small processes.
Yes.
Right. And they can run. They can be scheduled on different CPUs or run across many CPUs. And so basically, Erlang model is you have these isolated processes that do message passing to each other. And what's mine? So that quite obviously fits nicely with a multi-core distributed infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
The mind-boggling thing happens when you realize that these processes are so inexpensive to create, so you can consider them like objects. So in an Erlang VM, it's not an issue to have, say, 100,000 processes.
Nice.
And it kind of sounds crazy when we're used to maybe on the order of 1,000 or 10,000 limit on how many threads you can run in a mm-hmm. normal multi-threaded application. But when it's really liberating when you get kind of, it's limitless. It's just memory is the limit to how many processes you can have. So they're like green threads, or they're like very lightweight,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of, I imagine, similar to when Smalltalk came about and we introduced objects and people were saying, you know, how can you program with all these objects? You must be crazy. How do you manage all these objects? And you told them there was garbage collection, and you know, you have composition of these objects, and that's how you manage them. And you have like structure and trees, and the same goes for Erlang, right? You don't manage kind of 100,000 objects. You manage them in composition hierarchies, so they kind of go together. So you have composition, decomposition, specialization of processes, generic process, all the same kind of structural things that you have in are being joined as well.
So, nice.
So it's really a mind-boggling game changer when you realize that these processes are so lightweight, you can just think of them pretty much as objects.
Hmm.
And modeling many things becomes very natural when you compose processes. Lots of different things to learn there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm super engaged in that.
Great.
And there's it's been really really good to get to know these people in this community. Mm-hmm. They have a completely different discipline in building software that is reliable.
Mm-hmm.
There's culture around that whole thing of DevOps, and it's kind of, there's an honor system built in where people really care about writing software that is high quality and can sustain partial breakdowns and all this. It's part of that culture.
Excellent.
And it's something that I really think we need to learn. It's an important area.
Mm-hmm.
So high availability in general is something that I don't think many people are realizing, but as software is becoming infrastructure more and more,
mm-hmm.
we need to be more concerned with that in many different places. So,
excellent.
So one of the things, kind of concrete things that also kind of secondarily came out of this is mm-hmm. that we've done a lot of work with some concrete Erlang systems. Like we've been using this this cloud database called React.
Okay.
Quite extensively in Danish healthcare infrastructure for doing high availability of drug records.
Great.
So we're doing a lot of like drug systems for the equivalent of the FDA in Denmark, the nice. Danish Drug Administration.
Yep.
That kind of stuff.
That's great. I mean, I remember at GoTo, what we called it, it was JAL back then, was the conversations we had with Joe Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
That we filmed in the little areas that we could find.
Yeah.
We moved around the event, which was a lot of fun. And it was this notion, and it's interesting because you're the first person that's really talked about software, the not necessarily the performance attributes or the object-orientedness or how types are expressed, et cetera, but rather guaranteed upness,
mm-hmm.
availability, which is an interesting point. And clearly that's why Erlang was designed. It also happens to be super concurrent, and because of its concurrency and the way it's designed is why it's availability. Mm-hmm. Clearly they're tied. So it's nice to see that you've implemented it on top of your favorite VM,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to actually use it,
for now,
I would imagine, in...
In Trifork.
Yes.
Oh yeah, we're using it big time.
Great.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of work with Erlang Solutions, which is an Erlang consulting company.
Great.
And I'm also, that's... So the new hot kid on the block is this Dart thing, right?
Yes.
Which is finally doing away with threads and locks as a mechanism for doing concurrency, right?
They're using actors.
Isolates. They're calling them isolates. But it's a fundamental thing of doing isolated sequential programs, right?
Yes.
Communicating sequential programs.
Nice. So shared nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. All right. Well, hey, always great to talk
mm-hmm.
to you. We'll talk to you again.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I hope we can get over to GoTo, because
mm-hmm.
there'll be some, things are going to keep getting interesting. It's nice to see you've gone Erlang. And that can only mean good things. So
we'll
rock
see
and roll.
Thanks for having me here.
Of course, man. We'll see you soon.